From the studios at WMFE in Orlando, Florida, this is the Space Exploration Podcast, asking the question, are we there yet? Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. Every space exploration mission begins with a countdown. The clock hits zero, a rocket launches, and the cargo, whether it's a robot or an astronaut, heads to space. And rockets are big. And they need to be. They've got to hold a massive amount of fuel to produce enough thrust to escape Earth's gravity. And there's always the potential that something could go wrong. Well, what if we could get rid of rockets altogether? Is there a viable alternative? Well, the documentary called Skyline explores one alternative, which is an elevator into space. It's an idea as old as the Tower of Babel, and imagined by science fiction writers such as Arthur C. Clarke. But director Miguel Drake McLaughlin follows a few pioneering engineers who are taking the idea from the book to the real world. He joins me now from his offices in New York to talk about the documentary Skyline and the idea of a space elevator.
Well, the first time I heard about building an elevator to outer space, I was just astonished, and I had a reaction of that sounds ludicrous. But then I read a little bit about it, and I became very captivated by the arguments in favor of this kind of space transportation system. And I realized whenever I brought it up as a conversation topic, this is something that Johnny, my co-director, and I would do for years before we started working on the film. We would tell people, well, it would be great if we had an elevator to space to bring things to outer space. People would have these amazing reactions, and sometimes really negative and sometimes really positive. And it just engendered a lot of passion, a lot of argument. And we just thought it was something that we wanted more people to know about because it's an exciting idea and it does engender a really passionate response.
I mean, I myself am a proponent of space travel and space exploration, so I'm kind of interested into what were some of the negative comments you were getting from people when you brought up, hey, we might have this really easy way to get to space.
You know, I mean, I think the most common one is just, that's ridiculous. That will never work. It's too big. Things like that would be, you know, responses that we would get. And as you go further into the conversation and talk about how it's true that it's very difficult to build something that big with existing materials. Sometimes people are convinced, and sometimes people become even more convinced that it's too complicated of a project for people to pull off.
You know, I'm pretty intimate with the idea of this space elevator, and when I bring it up to people, they always think it's this, you know, it's a structure that's secured down on land that goes up. So kind of like a giant skyscraper that reaches into space. But that's not the way that these people are envisioning it, right?
No, the space elevator is really much better described as a very, very long cable. And so it's a cable that is pulled down to Earth by gravity, but it's on the equator, and as the Earth spins, the spinning of the Earth, the centripetal force, pulls it tight. The opposite end is so far away that it's being pulled away from Earth by that spinning motion. And it's not an elevator like you push a button and you get into a gigantic elevator shaft, although people sometimes draw it that way. It's much more like a cable that you would then attach cars, like like on a train or something. To ride up it.
It's kind of an interesting concept, like you did it so eloquently in the film, where it's, you know, imagine you have a ball tied to a string and you're swinging it around your head. That ball, that centrifugal force is going to pull that string taut, and that's kind of what they're going for, right?
That's right. The space elevator starts at geosynchronous orbit, which is a point where objects will rotate the Earth in a 24-hour period, and so they can rotate in a stationary position around the Earth. And you extend a cable away from the Earth, which gets pulled tight by centripetal force, and you extend another cable down towards the Earth, which gets pulled towards the Earth by gravity, and you just work to do the math so that those two forces stay in balance until the cable extends all the way from Earth to very far into outer space, possibly 100,000 kilometers out into space.
And you want that that geosynchronous orbit because you don't want to be pulled back to Earth, but you also don't want to be thrown out into space, right? That's kind of the middle ground that that they're looking for.
That's right. That's right.
So in the film, you kind of look at a few people who have this idea that are working towards it. But the idea for a space elevator stemmed from science fiction. Can you kind of talk to me about, you know, where that idea first came from, you know, on the pages of you know, science fiction novels? And then how did it kind of progress into actually like being mainstream science and an idea that people would be like, hey, wow, this might actually work?
Well, the original idea, and we cover this in our film, possibly you could say goes back very far to something like the Tower of Babel, where people are writing about the mythology of building a tower that goes all the way up to the stars. But the space elevator became most prominent, became very prominent in Arthur C. Clarke's book, The Fountains of Paradise. And Arthur C. Clarke, of course, is this visionary writer who, you know, wrote 2001 and many other classic science fiction novels. And he heard that there was this idea you could build an elevator to space, and he talked with Jerome Pearson, who's one of the scientists in our film, about how to make it work. And then he incorporated a space elevator into the Fountains of Paradise, and his readership, a huge readership, then knew about it, and some of his readership started to take it very seriously as a solution for getting a lot of cargo to space if people want to leave Earth, or if people want to bring large amounts of material off of, you know, out of Earth's gravity well.
And Miguel, I don't want to give too much away in the movie, but or the documentary, but as you kind of go through, it seems like there is just like setback after setback after setback. Like once it's proven that this is theoretically possible, this is great. Boom, there's a shuttle accident, and NASA's focusing all of its resources on figuring out what happened to the shuttle and getting that fleet back. And, you know, then there's some progress with another company in the great, you know, crash of the economy. I mean, do you think if those things didn't happen, we would be a little bit closer, or are we still not there yet?
Well, the key, the missing piece, the main reason we're not building a space elevator right this moment is that to build such a long structure, as I said, possibly 100,000 kilometers long, you need to have a material that can withstand a lot of tension, a material that is that has a high amount of tensile strength compared to its weight. And those materials are still experimental right now. So in the lab, we think we have found materials that could build a space elevator, but they're not really being produced in an industrial sense right now to do that. So that's really the big, big issue. But in terms of the will to do that, yeah, there have been a lot of issues with the U.S. space program doesn't seem especially interested in this technology, although we did film with NASA at a few events they did to support the space elevator program. And then there's also other just human issues where people have personality conflicts, and that can set projects back quite far. And that's something that we saw while we were filming. It's also the main character in The Fountains of Paradise ends up being a very prickly character who has a hard time getting things done. You know, there are a lot of setbacks. The biggest one is just that more material science research and breakthroughs are needed. But yeah, there's any number of things. Now, in some other countries, like in Japan, people just assume that Japan will build a space elevator because it's a really great solution for Japan's needs. The space elevator would help a lot with energy, and Japan is reliant on nuclear energy. And so school children in Japan know about the space elevator, but here in the U.S. it's not as commonly talked about or thought of as a solution for space technology.
That was something that surprised me that you brought up in the film, is that it would be a good source of energy. Can you kind of describe what Japan would do, and or what countries could, how they could utilize a space elevator to collect energy?
Well, one of the great arguments in favor of building a space elevator is that our global economy is very reliant on a lot of energy consumption, and we kind of bounce around between oil and some more environmentally friendly solutions. But a really great solution is just solar energy. And if the solar energy panels were established in space, you could essentially build an unlimited number of them, and you would have essentially an unlimited source of energy. The marginal cost of adding solar panels to a huge solar installation is nearly zero. So if you were able to build a huge solar installation in space, as we argue for in the film, that would solve the world's energy needs, basically. And people have argued in favor of building that in the New York Times and in other papers before, but bringing the materials to space is so expensive using rockets that it's not a solution that's taken very seriously right now. And a space elevator, by drastically lowering the cost of going into orbit, would, I think, we would immediately begin construction on this kind of solar energy solution.
I mean, the arguments there for it, as you said, the only thing missing is the material science to get that cable that would take the elevator up. Why don't you think there's more money being spent by these government agencies, the Japanese Space Agency, the NASA, the European Space Agency, to invest in that cable if the payoff is so great, as you say?
Well, there is a lot of promising research being done, and to a certain extent, I guess, we don't necessarily know about experimental materials that our government or other governments may be working on. But yeah, all of the characters in our film would, I think, argue strenuously that our government and other governments should be dedicating, billions upon billions of dollars into getting this material breakthrough, because it's, carbon nanotubes, if they're viable as a space elevator material, could have kind of world-changing capabilities in terms of how construction of everything is done.
Another great thing that you brought up in the film is the kind of the secondary development that comes from this, and this is how, exploration and invention goes, is you aim really high and you have to build things along the way. You highlighted a group of scientists that are creating like laser power. Like, all this really cool stuff is coming out of it. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. So some of the people that we worked with who are involved in the efforts to build an elevator from Earth to outer space are people who were working on the problem of how you would provide power to it. Because the whole reason that an elevator is nice compared to rockets is that rockets need to carry fuel up that they're just going to burn as they escape Earth's gravity well. And by using an elevator system, you don't need to have your fuel on board, because you can power it basically by pointing a laser at a photovoltaic cell on the elevator, and you can power it from Earth or from space. So we worked with people who can power things remotely with lasers. In this case, they competed in a NASA space elevator competition to climb a kilometer up a cable using no onboard power, only using laser power from the ground. And that was, that was an exciting competition that we filmed as part of Skyline. They're also able to point a laser at a helicopter and keep a helicopter afloat indefinitely, which is another really interesting energy application, and one that's very exciting for their company, which is called Laser Motive.
I had my notions going into watching this film, and from what I've read, this is unattainable. We're, decades, if not a century, off from coming up with this technology. But your film kind of changed my mind, and I'm a little more optimistic about it now. Where were you when you walked into this project, when you first started filming? Were you of the mindset that this can't be done, let me see what happens, and did your mind kind of change as you were filming this?
Well, when we began the project, when we met a lot of these scientists for the first time, we basically were so excited by the space elevator and the potential to transform access to space that our objective was really just to make a film to tell people that this is an idea that's out there that we should hope for and plan for, basically. As we filmed, we realized kind of how many obstacles there are to creating the elevator, and we realized that we were still very inspired by the idea, but we were also inspired by the people who are making real sacrifices to make this dream a reality. And we kind of not only wanted to share with our audience the potential of the elevator, but also let them know a little bit about the people who are trying to build it and what happens when you dedicate your life to building a world-changing technology like this, but one that's still in the experimental phase.
How long did you spend filming this documentary?
Well, we first met some of the people, including Jerome Pearson, who is one of the inventors who wrote one of the first peer-reviewed papers on the elevator. And we met Brad Edwards, who wrote a paper in the 90s that proved how the elevator was not only a theoretical idea, but could actually work under the right conditions, kind of prove that it was possible. We met them in 2008, and we filmed a bit with them, and then we would kind of catch up with them about once a year or so, up until we had kind of captured some ups and downs and seen the course of their adventures, and we wrapped filming in 2014.
And where can listeners watch this?
So our film is called Skyline, and our website is spaceelevator.net. And the film Skyline, the Space Elevator documentary, is available on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, Xbox Live, and Vudu. And we will have some more screenings. We screened at the Festival Doc NYC in November, and we have some more screenings coming up, but they're not yet announced. But it's available on Amazon, iTunes, and all these digital platforms via our distributor, Film Buff. And you can visit our website at spaceelevator.net.
And Miguel, when do you think you yourself will be able to ride in a space elevator?
Well, the space elevator, I believe, is inevitable. But in terms of when it will be built, I think, because it depends on the material breakthrough, I accept that it may not be in my lifetime, but I hope the material breakthrough comes soon and the construction begins over the next, 20 or 30 years or something like that. But it's very, very hard to predict.
Well, that about does it for this episode. Support for Are We There Yet? Comes from the listeners of WMFE. Follow the show online. We're on Twitter at AWTYMars. Or reach out to me in the Twitterverse. I love to hear feedback from listeners. I'm at SpaceBrendan. Are We There Yet? Is a production of WMFE. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. For more space news, visit us online at wmfe.org/space. I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.